Some weakening economic powers.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Yesterday, I led with the surprisingly impressive performance of the U.S. economy last quarter. This morning, a reminder that it might not last. U.S. exports were a key factor, but other economies are starting to lose their buying power. Today, Japan said it needs an $18 billion stimulus package. The EU said consumer confidence has hit a five-year low. Canada said its economy grew by just 0.3% in the second quarter. Compare that to 3.3% growth for the U.S. And then there's this. The U.S. government said personal incomes fell more than expected in July, and consumer spending didn't grow very much. So stocks are down a bit in the early going. The Dow has lost 23 points to 11,691. The NASDAQ is down 19, and the S&P 500 has dropped 3. Some strong gains in Asia based on yesterday's Wall Street rally. European shares are a fraction higher so far, and oil is at $118 a barrel. Oil traders are keeping a close eye on Hurricane Gustav. It'll be in the Gulf of Mexico soon. You can be sure the people of New Orleans are being vigilant. Today's the third anniversary of Katrina, of course. A few months after Katrina, we talked to some business people in New Orleans about their recovery. One of them was Sal Sunseri of P&J Oysters. His company's been around since 1876. Sal, how's business these days?
Well, Scott, look, business could be better, but I tell you what, considering all factors for the status of the city in New Orleans, I think we're doing very, very well.
Now, back when we talked to you after Katrina, you were concerned about the restaurant business. Obviously, that's one of your main customers. How do you feel that the restaurant industry is doing in New Orleans as it pertains to your business?
Well, to tell you the truth, we have more restaurants now than we did prior to the storm. The cost of doing business, though, is higher. I mean, just like all over the nation, the overhead to run a business is just getting enormous. But, you know, they're working hard and producing a beautiful product. We're still, I'm sure, the number one foodie town in the nation. So we're doing a heck of a job.
Well, it sounds like you're pretty optimistic, but is there anything at this point that you see as a concern that might be a stumbling block to future growth?
I feel the biggest obstacle to our future right now is that government has not fulfilled its obligation to help rebuild this incredible American city. It's so important to the rest of the nation and our port and our oil and gas. Just look, there is a storm in the Gulf right now. All of a sudden, Wall Street and government and everybody's all worried and prices of oil is going up. Well, the reason is because all of the production that we have in this area is so important to the United States. And our government needs to protect this area.
You know, there's a contingent of people out there who say it's just not a place that people should be living. What do you say to that?
Is San Francisco an important enough city to protect, even though there's earthquakes there and there could be a big one coming anytime soon? The entire nation is important. We are the richest nation in the world. Our government needs to protect its own.
All right, Sal Sunseri, Vice President at P&J Oysters in New Orleans. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Our weekend program, Marketplace Money, just did an entire show from New Orleans. You can hear it online at marketplace.org. You're listening to The Morning Report for Friday, August 29th on marketplace.org. One of the things giving the U.S. economy some strength right now is exports. They grew quite a bit in the spring. The weakened dollar has made U.S. products very attractive overseas. And, of course, American companies are all on board that gravy train. Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
It was no coincidence that U.S. CEOs like Bill Gates showed up at the Olympics in China. They didn't limit themselves to the opening ceremonies. Gates sat through a badminton match and later said he was very impressed. Of course, Gates is also impressed with the giant Chinese market. John Hancock economist Oscar Gonzalez says Asian demand for all electronics is huge.
If you think of the number of people that could acquire a cell phone in Indonesia, China, India, relative to the United States, there's no comparison.
Gonzalez says U.S. companies have already changed their business strategies to cater to hot foreign markets. But Wachovia chief economist Mark Vintner says eventually those markets will get too hot.
Some economies are overheating. There's inflation problems in China and India and Russia, and now they're cooling off.
As a result, Vintner expects U.S. exports to taper off next year. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Car sales numbers for August come out next week. Again, Detroit is expected to suffer. But that's not news. The fact that Toyota had to lower its sales forecast this week was a bit surprising. And today, Toyota said it's cutting production in Britain. Stephen Beard reports from London.
Compared with the bloodbath in the American market, British car production had been holding up. Toyota is the second biggest automaker in the UK, and it was considered a centre of stability and calm. But that tranquil image has now been dented. Toyota says it will cut the output of its British factory. Over the next 5 months, it will make 15,000 fewer cars for the European market. This is worrying, says David Bailey of the Birmingham Business School. We're not talking about gas guzzlers here.
The car being affected is a Toyota Auris, which is a small, compact-sized car, fuel efficient, actually. So I'm surprised that they're having to cut production, but clearly, with the slowdown in the economy, things simply don't add up.
Toyota has now temporarily abandoned its boldest ambition to become the first manufacturer in the world to sell 10 million cars a year. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Food prices have some people trying to eat cheaper, not necessarily healthier, but there's a festival in San Francisco today that celebrates good old-fashioned homemade meals. Chrissy Clark has more.
The festival's called Slow Food Nation, as opposed to, you know.
I may help you.
Hi, can I have a Southern-style chicken sandwich, please?
The fast food we're used to. Americans eat on average 1 in 5 meals in their car. Slow Food Nation organizer Anya Fernald says the alternative is much more fun.
Slow food would be something of sitting down with your friends to a dinner that you made yourself. You can make something from scratch that you usually buy processed.
The weekend festival will tempt 50,000 visitors with demos on green cooking, field trips to local farms, and tasting pavilions for coffees and artisan salamis. Fernald knows slow food may be a hard sell to Americans these days. It can be a lot more expensive.
What you're going to pay now, you're going to pay later. They're going to be paying in terms of their health bills and the environmental consequences long down the road.
In San Francisco, I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
I am hungry, 'cause you're not here anymore.
After Labor Day weekend, there's usually a dry spell at the movie theater. There are so many big releases in the summer that the studios peter out until the holidays. So theater chains have come up with some creative ways to fill the seats in the fall. Rico Galliano explains.
It's Sunday morning at Rolling Hills Estates Mall in Southern California. Several hundred people are piling into a theater at the Regal Cinema 13. A matinee screening of Space Chimps, maybe? Not quite.
Well, welcome to the Los Angeles International Church of Christ.
This branch of the Church of Christ holds services in this movie theater every weekend. On screen, they project snapshots from youth group campouts.
Here's a couple of pictures of the bus as it's driving in. Actually, that's me right there in the corner.
And later, a band plays rock and roll spirituals.
Amen. Let's go ahead and let our worship shine here. We're going to sing Open the Eyes of My Heart.
That's guitarist slash vocalist slash minister Brian Craig. His congregation is one of 170 nationwide who go to church at cinemas. They rent the space through National Cinemedia. The company was founded 3 years back by the nation's top three movie chains, mainly to sell advertising time in theaters. But CEO Kurt Hall says 5% of their revenue now comes from, quote, cinema meetings, renting to everyone from churches to corporations.
There's thousands and thousands of meetings each year, and that number has been increasing over the last 2 or 3 years. Microsoft has used the network, for instance, for years.
The tech giant takes advantage of the theater's networked digital projectors to hold what are basically giant video conferences. Church of Christ minister Marco Pellizzari says for religious groups, the appeal is simpler.
What really resonated with me was how accessible this place is, the parking, and 99 out of 100 people that I tell where we meet, they know where it's at already.
There's also the fact that buying or building a church in Southern California would be ungodly expensive. Cinemedia rents theaters for $560 a week and up. I asked ministers Marco and Brian if rent includes one all-important essential.
Do you guys get to use the popcorn machine?
No, we do not. I'm not a big fan of popcorn in the morning. So even if we did, I don't think it would be a big hit.
I love popcorn any time of day, so we should renegotiate that because that would be awesome.
In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, the city of Shanghai opens one of the world's tallest buildings. It's taken 14 years to build this thing. So does this mean Shanghai has arrived as a global financial power? Here's our correspondent in Shanghai, Scott Tong.
The Shanghai World Financial Center is a slim glass structure that soars 1,600 feet high. Its signature is a big square hole near the top, as if the building doubles as a giant bottle opener.
Yeehaw!
At the media preview, staff members greet and bow in unison. It's a touch imported by the building's Japanese owner. Another dominant theme here is futuristic. In the elevator lobby, space-age kaleidoscopes gyrate from the ceiling. Indeed, developer Minori Mori says the building will help Shanghai blast off into its future.
It will become a global magnet that attracts the best and the brightest people and resources. We support Shanghai's development into a real global financial center.
But one trophy building does not make a financial capital. Yang Zhaojun teaches finance at Shanghai's Jiao Tong University. He says buildings and infrastructure do matter. He calls it hardware. But China's human software is lacking.
Our software, our commitment to following the rules, our talent pool. All these soft skills need to improve so we can catch up to the rest of the world.
Shanghai's biggest weakness is regulations from Beijing. The Chinese government imposes high corporate taxes. It restricts foreign currency from coming and going, and it limits the financial products on the shelf. It's as if Shanghai were a casino that only has slot machines. Glenn McGuire is an economist with Societe Generale in Hong Kong.
There's not the same investment opportunities in the China market as there is in the Hong Kong market. These type of products, financial markets, futures markets, take several years, if not a decade, to develop.
One poll ranks Shanghai 31st of the world's top financial centers. London is number one, and then New York, and then Hong Kong. The poll predicts Shanghai will move up, but for now, some international consultants still mock it as a wannabe. Take the financial district's name. It's Pudong, or as the joke goes, Poo Jersey. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
That building really does look like a bottle opener. You can see a photo of it at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
What does the future hold for an economy when a good chunk of the population is nearing retirement age?
Our age group from 55 to 65 plus, we have about 32% of our workforce. And so you can see in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to lose the majority of our workforce.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. As the Republicans go to the Twin Cities, a look at the economy next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.